Agnes raising her glass in the air. I clink mine against it and echo her words. To Sam. We take our ciders over to our chairs. I kick off my shoes and Sue hands me my putty. I take sips from my glass as I fill her in on my week, and she listens and nods. She doesn't have her leather-bound portfolio on her lap like she usually does, so I have a feeling this is going to be a light session. After the last few, I imagine we could both use one. 3 weeks ago, we spent the entire time role-playing my breakup with the Crazy Eights. The week after that, I spent the whole time crying, wondering if I'd made the right decision. Last week, we switched gears, and Sue convinced me to recite the poem I wrote for Caroline. And then she asked me to read more of my poems, and I cried even harder. As I was reading, I started to realize how much the number 3 has been impacting my thoughts and actions, and by the end of our session, I told her I wanted to work harder to control my impulses, which meant I had to fess up about the odometer. Sue pointed to the putty in my hands. What if you took a chunk of that with you today and used it to cover the numbers? I'd squeezed it in between my fingers and told her that might work. If you feel like you truly need to remove it before you park, go ahead, she says. Then put it back, but see if you can keep it on there for good. I still think about those numbers every time I park, but I haven't cheated once. We talk about AJ next. I fill her in on everything, and then I tell her he drove me to my appointment today. He needed some new guitar strings, and the music store is a couple blocks away. I take a sip of my sparkling cider, thinking about how the whole conversation with AJ played out. We've talked a lot about Sue over the last few weeks. He knows how important she is to me, and that I want him to meet her someday. I'm not sure I'm ready for that yet, but I liked the idea of him dropping me off. I told him he could meet Colleen if he wanted to. I kind of needed him to see where I go on Wednesdays. I can tell she's proud of me. I'm feeling a little proud of myself, too. It feels good to talk. It feels good to be surrounded by people who make it so easy. And then she asks me about Caroline, and I get quiet for a long time. Finally, I tell her how my stomach falls every time I look at the other end of my locker bank and find it empty, and how I often sit in the first row of the theater during lunch, writing in the dark like the two of us used to do. I admit that last week, I started making a playlist of songs that were popular during Caroline's high school years and titled it Right Beside You after the lyrics in a Snow Patrol song. I miss her. A lot. Every day. The lump in my throat swells and I can feel my eyes welling up. I don't want to cry. Not today. Sue must be able to tell from the look on my face because she stands and claps her hands together once. Hey, she says excitedly, I have something for you. She walks over to her desk and returns carrying a box wrapped in bright blue paper with a big white bow around the center. She hands it to me. You got me a Christmas present? Let me guess, a shiny new brain? A healthy one this time? I give it a little shake. Damn, too light. It's just a little something I couldn't resist. It spoke to me, said you two needed each other. Hey, if I can talk to imaginary people, I guess you can talk to inanimate objects. I tug at the bow and it falls to the floor. I pull the lid off the box. No way, I say. I hold the t-shirt up in front of me so I can read the big block letters. I am silently correcting your grammar. Sue, this is awesome. It's so... I stop short of saying the first thing that pops into my head. Then I say it anyway. Caroline. I stand up and hug her, even though I'm not supposed to, and she hugs me back, despite the fact that we're breaking her professional distance code. I layer my new shirt over the top of my long-sleeved tee and model it for her. What do you think? I ask. Perfect, she says. No, it's not perfect, but it's me. When our time is up, I leave her office and head back to the waiting room, realizing that, for the first time in 5 years, we didn't talk about the Crazy Eights. AJ had said he'd meet me downstairs, so I'm surprised to find him in the waiting room. Hey, he says, nice shirt. Thanks, it was a gift from Sue. I point to Colleen. Did you two meet? We did, she says. She's no longer wearing that pity stare. She's looking at us with a glowing, giddy expression I'm more accustomed to. See you next Wednesday, I tell her. AJ and I walk out the doors and stop in front of the elevators. And once we're out of Sue's office and away from Colleen's curious eyes, he wraps his arms around me. I feel his fingers in my hair and his breath on my neck, and he doesn't say a word. He just hugs me tight for the longest time. I love the way I fit in his arms, how my ear rests perfectly against his chest, and I can hear his heartbeat. Thanks for coming today, I tell him.
I'm glad I did.
Me too. I reach out and press the elevator button. Once. I feel the urge to push it two more times, but I grab AJ's hand and kiss it instead. Got this one. It's pouring outside. AJ, Cameron, Chelsea, Jessica, Sydney, and I are gathered around a table in the cafeteria. Emily would be here, but her mom lost her long battle with cancer, and she hasn't been at school since we returned from winter break. The funeral is tomorrow, and Emily asked AJ to play one of her mom's favorite songs. We'll all be there, of course. I glance over at the spot where I used to sit. Alexis, Caitlin, Olivia, and Haley are all where they belong, eating and chatting as usual. We haven't said much to each other in the last month, but they all look happy. Even Haley. AJ rests his hand on my knee.
You all right?
Yeah. I push my food around my plate. I'm not very hungry today. I pull my phone out of my pocket and check the time. We still have another 30 minutes before lunch is over. I think I'll go write for a bit.
Have fun,
he says, giving my leg a squeeze. I stand up, grabbing my tray off the table and telling everyone I'll see them later. Before I leave, I wrap my free arm around AJ's neck from behind. Love you, I whisper in his ear. The rain is coming down harder, which doesn't matter that much until the covered walkway comes to an end, and there's no other way to get to the theater's double doors than to cross the open grass. I throw my jacket over my head and make a run for it. Once I'm inside, I toss my jacket over a chair in the back row and walk down the aisle to the front of the theater. I sit in the chair I always sit in, open my yellow notebook to an empty page, and fish around in the bottom of my backpack until I find a mechanical pencil. I click it once, twice, three times, and then I hear Shrink Sue's voice in my head, telling me to click it again, so I give it a fourth click. I stop, resisting the urge to click it two more times. I scoot back into the chair and slide down low, kicking my legs out in front of me, crossing them at the ankles, staring up at the ceiling, and trying to decide where to start. I tap the eraser against the paper. I'm at a loss. I close my eyes and sit like that for a few minutes, breathing in the musky smell of this room, running my fingernails back and forth across the upholstery. I never expected to feel a connection to this place, and now, sometimes it's the only place I want to be. It's been a tough week. I can't stop thinking about Emily. I want to write a poem for her, something that expresses how sorry I am and tells her how much her friendship means to me, but the words aren't coming today. I let out a groan and look down at my feet. I see a pair of boots right next to my shoes, then legs crossed at the ankles, mirroring my posture exactly. My gaze travels up slowly, carefully, like I'm afraid any sudden movement will cause me to lose her. When I reach her face, I suck in a breath. Then I give her the biggest smile. Hey, I'm glad you're here, I say, tapping the page with my pencil. I could use your help with this. Her head falls to the side and she smiles back at me. Anytime, she says as she reaches over and takes my hand in hers. I want to keep looking at her, but instead I let my eyes fall shut. Actually, I whisper, I think I've got this one. When I open my eyes again, Caroline is gone, and I start filling the page with words. Author's note. I became interested in writing a story about a teen with obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, when a close family friend was diagnosed 4 years ago at age 12. I sympathized with and related to her battle with insomnia, her struggles to interpret her friend's words and actions, and her challenges to control a stream of negative, often terrifying thoughts she simply couldn't turn off. I knew she wasn't alone. I wanted to learn more about this disorder and to understand what it was like to live inside her mind. She was eager to share her experience, and I was honored when she agreed to work with me on this novel. Over the last 2 years, I've done extensive research on OCD and what some refer to as purely obsessional or pure O OCD, where the emphasis is more on internal thoughts and images than external compulsions. I've learned that many professionals consider the term a bit of a misnomer. Compulsions are still part of the disorder. They're simply easier to hide. But many people with OCD use pure O to differentiate an obsession with their thoughts from the better-known external behaviors, like ritualized hand-washing or lock-checking. I have read hundreds of blogs written by adults and teens, detailing what it's like to live with OCD and pure O. I have pored over articles and medical journals filled with exhaustive information about treatments and medications. I've consulted closely with 4 mental health professionals to be sure this work of fiction portrays an accurate account of OCD, while also demonstrating the value of a strong patient-therapist relationship. It has been enlightening, inspiring, and heartbreaking. During my research, I became especially interested in exposure therapy, a subset of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. I found it empowering and wove it into the story when Sam's mother hands her a pair of scissors to prove that she won't act on her invasive, fearful thoughts. While there are hints in the text itself, it is important to me that readers understand that prior to this scene, 1. Sue has led Sam through exposure therapy sessions in her office, 2. Sue has formally trained Sam's mother so she can provide the 24/7 support Sam might require, and 3. Sue and Sam's mother operate as a team and are in constant communication about managing Sam's disorder. My professional resources have confirmed that, while it is atypical to perform exposure therapy outside a controlled office environment or to involve a parent in this process, it is certainly something they have employed under ideal circumstances. However, a professional therapist always oversees and is closely involved in any CBT treatment. CBT can be emotionally and physically intense, with sessions spanning weeks or months. Afterward, practitioners may transition back to traditional talk therapy, which is what Sue and Sam engage in through the majority of the novel. While this is a work of fiction, the relationship between Sue and Sam in many ways mirrors the relationship between the real-life teen who inspired this story and her therapist for the last 4 years. Throughout the process of writing this novel, I've become even more moved by their connection, and I've gained a whole new level of respect for mental health professionals, especially those who work closely with teens. If you or someone you know is struggling with OCD, anxiety, depression, or any other mental health concern, I strongly encourage you to seek out your own Sue. She, he is real and out there, waiting, eager, and able to help. Here are a few reputable places to begin. www.sfbacct.com, www.teenmentalhealth.org, www.beyondocd.org/just-4-teens, and www.kids.iocdf.org. I want to close with an update on the girl who originally inspired this story. C is now 16. I can't get her to swim, but she has started writing poetry. And while she doesn't share it broadly, she finds writing extremely therapeutic. She's found true friends who make her feel good about herself, and she's even found her very own AJ. Recently, she decided that she's brave enough to go away to college, where she plans to study psychology and become a therapist herself someday. I am proud of her beyond words. This program was produced by Ideal Audiobooks. Copyright 2015 by Disney Hyperion. Production copyright 2015 by Ideal Audiobooks, LLC. All rights reserved. For more information on our catalog of unabridged audiobooks, please visit www.idealaudiobooks.com. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.